Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Nick Augustine, and I'm here with attorney Joseph Roble from Joseph Roble Limited, the Chicago bankruptcy law firm. This is the Chicago Bankruptcy Update, featuring information, news, and updates in bankruptcy law. Financial troubles are stressful, and bankruptcy can be a solution for you. If you are considering filing a bankruptcy, Joseph Roble will courteously and professionally review your finances, answer all your questions, and provide the information you need to determine if filing for bankruptcy makes sense, has value, and is the best way to provide relief from your financial woes. For a library of information about bankruptcy and the Chicago bankruptcy firm of Joseph Roble Limited, please visit the website, ChicagoBankruptcy.com. Today we are here for the March 2016 Chicago Bankruptcy Question and Answer Podcast with Joseph Roble. A few of the topics that we're going to cover on our 30-minute show today. We'll ask the question, should I file for Chapter 7 bankruptcy or pay off some charged-off debts? Another one is, can I file for bankruptcy if I'm involved in an automobile accident and have no insurance? Next, we'll find out what happens when we need to remove a creditor who's still appearing on someone's credit rating after the bankruptcy discharge. And, of course, we have someone who wants to know if after they've already had a Chapter 7 discharge, must they wait and how long to file a Chapter 13 case. Joseph Roble is my guest today, and he's been a practicing attorney since 1973 and has experience in a wide variety of legal matters relating to individuals and families. He presently concentrates his practice in consumer bankruptcy, as Mr. Roble helps people get out of debt and get the fresh financial start they need. He is an active member in several bar associations and is on the bankruptcy panel of the pro bono program of the Chicago Volunteer Legal Services. Mr. Roble earned a BA in psychology from Northwestern University in 1973 and a JD from DePaul University Law School. He also served in the U.S. Army Reserve 363rd Civil Affairs Unit, that is. By way of short disclaimer, this is a general information program, and the advice shared on the show does not constitute legal advice, and listening to the show does not give you an attorney-client relationship. But if you do have questions, you should call the bankruptcy law firm of Joseph Roble Limited and make an appointment to speak to an attorney by dialing area 312-781-0996. Finally, all callers remain confidential and rights to this broadcast are reserved. And it is time to say hello to Joe Roble. Hey, Joe, are you there? Hello? Joe, can you hear me? We're going to try to bring Joe in now. Hey, Joe, can you hear me now? One more try. Hey, there we go. Joe,
hello.
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Hey, there we go. Yes.
Yeah,
we
had, there was some technical difficulty because I've been on for a while, but no problem. Anyway, thanks for that nice introduction, and I can't believe I've been practicing law that long. It's a long time.
It is a long time, but that just means that you've seen just about everything that the world could throw at you. But then we want to be careful not to say those things, because just when you think that's the case, you get something new.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right. Well, again, our questions in this program are real questions from real people, and we answer them to the best extent possible. And our first question comes from someone who is considering Chapter 7 bankruptcy because they have some charge-offs and they're not sure if they should pay them. Person says, I have about $7,000 of debt and my credit charge-offs, mostly credit charge-offs, $8,000 of deferred student loans, and this says I've just transferred into a new job and it's probably going to take about 3 to 4 years to pay off all the debt, including the student loans. So not sure if it's cheaper to file bankruptcy and get a fresh start immediately. What would be the best course of action? So again, $7,000 in debt, credit card charge-offs, and then another $8,000 in deferred student loans.
So this is a tough one to answer. Normally, my usual response to clients are, if you can avoid a bankruptcy, do so. So avoiding meaning for this particular client would be to pay off the $7,000 worth of debt. And of course, the student loans, although they're deferred now, will come due. That's more money they'll have to pay, and you can't get rid of student loans in bankruptcy. So the issue becomes, how easy or how hard is it going to be for this particular client to pay this back in 3 to 4 years? It's not a lot of debt, but I don't know what the income is. It could be a lot of debt for this person if they're making a very small salary, spending money for lawyer's fees, $1,000, $1,200, $1,500, $1,800, depending on where the person lives and what the going rate is, plus the court filing costs. Is it worthwhile to spend that much money to get rid of only $7,000 in debt? Those are the types of questions I will pose back to a client. So at least they have an idea. They've got a framework, to decide between these various options mm-hmm. and weigh what's most important for them.
So let me throw in a...
Go ahead.
I was just going to throw in a hypothetical with this case, this person. Let's have a hypothetical where they have this amount of debt and they're concerned about some of these credit card companies coming and suing them to get a judgment and then garnish their wages. What if they are someone who is working at an employer where they don't want the embarrassment of that? Potentially they're on thin ice for something else already at that employer. Would they be able to, what are concerns at that employer? And I suppose that person might ask then, if they do file for a Chapter 7, do they need to notify their employer of that?
Okay, that's a very good secondary issue. If they're being sued already, then unless they can work something out with the creditor, which becomes difficult, bankruptcy may be a great option for them. If they waited too long and they have a wage garnishment, then bankruptcy, of course, is an option, and the employer will need to be notified to stop the wage garnishment because the bankruptcy will stop the creditor from doing the garnishment. If they're not at that point yet and they want to avoid bankruptcy and try to pay, if it doesn't work and it looks like they're going to be sued or have a lawsuit started, they can still go ahead and file the bankruptcy. So there's different stages to make the decision. And a lot of it depends upon the personal comfort of the individual. Some people are very uncomfortable with a bankruptcy and really will avoid it unless they really have to. And other people are just ready to do it, clear up their debt, and get on with their lives. So people are looking for clear and direct answers, and you can't always do that. You've got the variables of their situation, and then you have the variables of their own personality. But what I try to do is give people a framework from which they can make their decision. Because many times when clients come to see me, they don't know where to turn. They have all these different things going on in their heads, and meeting with me to go over how this works provides them with some direction.
Direction is good, and making these decisions, again, with the employer, if these people decide to go ahead and file the bankruptcy and it's not gotten to the point where the employer is otherwise involved, will the employer have to be notified of the bankruptcy?
Absolutely not. Absolutely.
So there you go. There you go. You know, and a lot of people think, too, that bankruptcy is going to be something that the entire world will use to cast judgment upon them, the same way that a lot of people feel that they are doing something morally wrong if they file, if they've got a money judgment that they owe someone and they've filed for bankruptcy. It's just the law that's out there to help people get a fresh start. And, again, most people are not ever going to find out about it unless you tell them directly. So let's move on. Exactly. So our next question here is kind of a piggyback on that one, another one with the student loan issue. Again, something just to note, there are a lot of articles and people writing out there in the world about the potential for student loan discharge. And we need to sometimes think critically when we see a lot of these things, because sometimes these are just being written because people are clicking around, you know, clicking on these articles and finding other things, and it's a good advertising and marketing. However, the reality of student loan bankruptcy, as Joe will tell us again, is a little bit different and much more difficult than people might almost impossible, really. So this next person says, does have, again, a student loan question. They have a private student loan. It's a not a Parent PLUS loan or any other type, just a straight private student loan. I'm the only signatory on the loan and made an agreement. So here's where we go. We have an agreement with the parents that they would pay my monthly payment on the student loan for 3 years after graduation. The payment on the student loan has been paid from their checking account for 3 years. And it says, if I am unable to pay that student loan and go into default, and if the bank decides to sue me at some point, can the bank then go after the parents because the parents were making payments for 3 years? I want to make sure they are protected in the worst-case scenario. So interesting, good question. This is a question I could see someone having.
No, absolutely. And just so people understand, private student loans or through a federal agency, no different. Student loans are just not dischargeable, except for extreme situations where someone's terribly handicapped physically or mentally or both. So in this situation, the agreement that this person has with their parents has nothing to do with the agreement to repay the student loan. So the fact that the parents have been paying cannot and does not make the parents liable. So once the parents stop paying, and if this particular client is unable to pay, the student loan company can only go after the client, not the parents. There's no liability on their part at all. They would have had to have signed as guarantors or co-signers on the student loan, which apparently from this question, they did not.
All right. So they're, you know, good luck with the parents there. They may want, I don't know, best wishes. Moving on. Our next individual, I don't know what else to say. The next question is someone says they want to know what should they do if they've been sued for a demolition of a rental property they owned before filing Chapter 7. It further says, I have just been served with a court summons for demolition of my rental property. I've owned it since before filing for bankruptcy with Chapter 7. I was discharged from the mortgage debt, but the property is still in my name.
As with many of the questions we've been getting over the last 6 months or so, a common problem, it is often that people use a Chapter 7 bankruptcy so that they never have to pay a mortgage or any mortgage sufficiency. They give up on property that they own, whether it's property they've lived in as residents or that they've used for investment. But the ongoing problem that they can have as long as they are the owners of the property, meaning that they haven't sold it and transferred title to someone, or a foreclosure has not been completed and the property was sold and taken over either by a third party of the or a bank, as long as they are entitled, they are responsible for municipal violations, municipal code to the town in which the property is located. And in this particular case, if property was demolished and they're still the owner, the bankruptcy doesn't protect them and they can get stuck for paying that demolition cost. The difficulty is a lot of people who are going to file bankruptcy, they can't wait. They need to get it done, and they can't wait for the property to no longer be in their hands. And this is just, it's a situation where the completion of the bankruptcy still leaves open some loose ends. We see this when there are homeowners associations. People are giving up property. You are responsible to a homeowners association as long as you're entitled. We sometimes try to delay a person's bankruptcy if they can until the property is no longer in their hands or the completion of the foreclosure is closed. But you can't always do it. And, you know, as we see, we have to take the clients as they are in their particular fact situation and make the best decision for them under the circumstances.
Right. And, you know, it can be rather complicated. You know, if someone has just a basic straightforward financial life, if all you need to do is inherit a property here and there from, you know, some aunt somewhere, or, you know, then you run into a condition here where it's a rather confusing situation, and most individuals might just have no clue as what to do there. So, you know, with these present bankruptcy laws that apply to all these huge variety of situations, it often gets kind of complicated. So all these procedures involved and the documentation that may be required when someone's particularly unfamiliar with the law can be daunting. And if someone is interested in finding out more about bankruptcy, Joseph Robel has over 40 years' experience in representing clients in consumer bankruptcy. And what's important about that experience is it ensures that your financial situation will be properly analyzed, because he's probably run into a similar situation before. Joseph Robel and his staff understand that you might be a little anxious about your financial problems and likely tired of harassment on the daily, nonstop basis by the creditors. But you still might be uncertain as to whether filing that bankruptcy case is really what you need. So if bankruptcy will help your financial situation, you will be properly advised for which chapter you may qualify. At Joseph Robel Limited, the entire procedure from beginning to end will be clearly explained, and you'll receive a what to do next letter that identifies all the documents that you will need to provide, and that will happen at or after your free consultation. And it will guide you through the entire process, again, from start to finish. Now, if you do not need to file for bankruptcy, they will tell you. Joseph Robel Limited will not push you into a bankruptcy simply to earn a fee. Joseph Robel Limited is a small law firm of attorneys and staff experienced in consumer bankruptcy. They are not a big bankruptcy law factory, and you won't get lost in their office. But you will be treated as a human being with the courtesy, dignity, and respect you deserve. The mission of Joseph Robel Limited is to have you take control over your finances through proper use of the bankruptcy laws. Joseph Robel Limited has offices conveniently located in Chicago Loop, Chicago Rosemont, and in the suburbs of Burr Ridge, Deerfield, Gurnee, Naperville, Orland Park, Schaumburg, Skokie, St. Charles, and Westchester. So they can represent Illinois clients in Cook County as well as the suburban collar counties of Will, DuPage, Kane, LaSalle, Kendall, and Lake County. Back to our program, I want to first tell people to again visit the Chicago Bankruptcy Law Firm at chicagobankruptcy.com for a library of blog articles, podcasts, and links, frequently asked questions, just about every learning tool that one might need to wrap their head around bankruptcy and get ready and make that phone call to start going over your particular information there. So chicagobankruptcy.com is the website. All sorts of good information. All right, back to our program with Joe Robel here. Our next question is from someone who has a vehicle loan question. The person has a 2012 automobile. They owe $31,000 on it, and it was repossessed. They said they won't release it until $6,000 for repair. Repairs are paid in full. The person wants to know, if I file for Chapter 13 bankruptcy, will I be able to resume possession of the car from the dealership so I can drive it?
The answer is yes. that's the simple answer. The more complicated answer is this vehicle worth the amount of money that he or she will have to pay? What will the payments be under a Chapter 13 plan? Does it make sense to do that to get the car back? What was the cause of the repossession? Unexpected expenses? A job loss? Is the income there now to afford this car? Is the car insured? They won't be able to get the car back unless it's completely covered with with property damage and liability insurance. So the process would be after an initial interview with a competent, experienced local bankruptcy attorney, the attorney will figure out what a payment plan would need to be. The petition's prepared. The client signs it. It's filed with the court. And after the case is filed, the repossession company, the dealership, the finance company, where whoever took the car, will be contacted by the attorney, and arrangements will be made to return the vehicle to the debtor. That can take anywhere from 2 to 7 days. Evidence of insurance needs to be presented. But in general, the answer is almost always yes, unless there's circumstances. Maybe it's the third time it's been repossessed and they've given the car back twice and now they don't want to do it. But generally, a Chapter 13 is a good vehicle to get your vehicle back.
There you go. There you go. Pun intended. Well, you know, and a lot of people might be a lot of folks might be concerned that if they let that car go and, you know, they're never going to be able to get another car loan again. And, you know, it's the same question people say, well, you know, how will I ever rent another home or apartment again after bankruptcy? And almost always they're able to do so. You know, there's a marketplace out there. You might pay a little bit more, you know, so, but you'll still get a car. All right, so automobile accident, no insurance. Uh-oh, this is unfortunate. Person was involved in an automobile accident without any insurance. The accident was their fault, and the other party wants $10, or not $10, $10,000 for damages and injuries. Also, he wants to know, is my wife still responsible for that liability because he's married? And what happens if I file for bankruptcy?
A quick aside, one of the most remarkable things to me in all these years of doing bankruptcy is the number of times that people did not have insurance, even for a day, and on that particular day they have an accident and no coverage. It's something that you would never predict. So Chapter 7 bankruptcy will wipe out this debt. It'll allow the person to keep their license, or if a license was suspended because they were in an accident without insurance, get their license back. The wife can in no way be responsible for this particular claim. It's the marriage to the husband who had the accident has nothing to do with liability for debt. And if the husband can't do a Chapter 7 because the income is too high, or because he owns something that he would lose in a Chapter 7, doing a Chapter 13 and paying this debt back in full or partially will also save their license and avoid lawsuit and wage garnishment.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Definitely also, though, do talk, sit down with the wife, because while you might not be otherwise liable, you might be liable in your own marriage. That might be a factor for some people. So sometimes it might take on the second job. I don't know. But so, you know, it's, you know, the wonder here, too, another question, the $10,000 in damages, is that a firm amount now, or is that going to, you know, be greater as the people have, you know, have they filed a lawsuit yet? I mean, there's so many different factors and variables. So again, whether these things seem straightforward or not, always good to talk to a bankruptcy lawyer who asks you those questions that you might not have thought about. Our next question comes from someone who wants to know what to do to remove a creditor who's still hanging around on their credit report after the Chapter 7 and the creditor was included. They said, I filed a Chapter 7 bankruptcy in 2013. One of my creditors, I'm positive, I added on my notice to the creditors, is still on the credit report. It says, the lawyer I used passed away a year ago, so I am at a loss. Can I go to the bankruptcy court's clerk and ask for a copy of my file, present it to the credit bureaus? Not sure what to do. How do I clear this up?
The client answered their own question. Yes, get a copy of your bankruptcy petition and the discharge. Send it into the credit bureau, advising them that the report, credit report should be changed to show that this particular debt was included in the bankruptcy. Problems with incorrect, improper information on a credit bureau are endemic. I read a statistic that 25% of the population has something wrong with their credit report. It may be the wrong digit in a Social Security number or wrong address. And this has nothing to do with bankruptcy. When you obtain a copy of your credit – I'm sorry?
I'm surprised it's not higher, actually. Yeah, I would think it would have been higher.
Well, I don't know. We got 350 million people, 25%. That's a lot of people. No, I guess maybe the percentage would be higher. But
all right,
when you get your credit report, there are instructions as to what to do to dispute something that's on the report. So this can be done without an attorney. It's a little frustrating. It may require a number of mailings and some phone calls, but it should be quite doable.
All right. Next person wants to know if they should do a bankruptcy or walk away. I talked to a lawyer, said that I could file for bankruptcy or just let my debt go because the only income I have is Social Security disability insurance and they cannot garnish that. Which is the way to go?
This sort of relates to that first question, someone who had $7,000 in debt and whether they should file or not. The answer, again, is similar. And mostly it depends on the personality. If you are a person who, if you don't care about getting letters from creditors, if you don't care about maybe having to go to court because you're not paying your creditors and they're going to sue you and you simply have to explain that there's really no way to collect because they are uncollectible against when all their income is Social Security, then you can save your money, not spend money on attorney's fees and court filing costs and not do a bankruptcy. I get quite a number of clients who come in who are, as this particular client is, judgment-proof. A lawsuit against them, a judgment determination by a court that money is due and owing is basically worthless to the creditor. The creditor is not going to know that until they dig into this case and do court proceedings and find out. And a lot of people decide to file a bankruptcy anyway because they just don't want to deal with the hassle, even though there's nothing that can be taken from them. I do give the clients the option so they understand, and a lot of it is a personality question, who can handle dealing with this and who cannot.
Right, exactly. All right, so it's a difficult, people have a different threshold. You just don't answer those phone calls, and I don't, only answer the calls you know. That's what a lot of people, actually not, people say, I don't answer any phone number that isn't programmed in my phone, and if it's someone for me, they'll leave a voicemail. Other people answer every call that comes in because they don't want to be rude. So again, it's just a variety of people out there and your comfort level. All right, our next person wants to know what to do about some medical emergency debt. Can they do it? And the debt was incurred after they had a filing for bankruptcy. It says, I had a medical emergency and went to the emergency room at the hospital. The day before, I went to the 341 creditors meeting. The debt from the emergency medical service came to $3,000. And I need to include this in my already filed bankruptcy case. Case has not been discharged or closed. It's ongoing. Please advise what to do.
Unfortunately, they are stuck. The Chapter 7 bankruptcy only allows for a discharge for those debts that were incurred up until the day before the actual filing. So if they incurred a bill after the filing date, they are going to have to pay this. There's just no way around it. No way around it.
No amending the bankruptcy petition to include other debts.
You can only amend if there was a debt that was in existence before filing and you forgot about it, it was overlooked, the bill was sitting in your kitchen drawer way at the bottom of a pile of papers and you found it afterwards, but anything incurred after filing, out of luck.
Let's add a wrinkle. What if they have an option to voluntarily withdraw the bankruptcy petition? Can they wait and then refile and include this debt?
Yes. They can do that. They wind up with two bankruptcies on their record because the filing of one shows up on your credit report. There are situations where a trustee won't let you withdraw if there's a possibility of some assets. So yeah, it's a possibility and not a common thing, but it can be done. It can be done.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Many options out there. All right. The next person wants to know, when I die, who's responsible for any debts that I have? It says I'm single and I have no children.
Technically, there's no one is responsible personally for the debts of a family member who dies. What can happen is the deceased person, if they have any family, brothers, parents, grandparents, each state has their own system of distributing assets to family members that are alive after somebody dies. And if there is something to distribute, money in bank accounts, stocks, bonds, CDs, cars, real estate, that's called a probate estate. And a creditor of the deceased can file a claim against the estate, or they can even open an estate in order to have a claim filed. And then the asset that would go to the family member would be reduced by the amount of money owed on that particular debt. So it's a little convoluted. The creditor could possibly get paid if there is some kind of an estate, but there isn't no one that's personally responsible for the deceased's debt.
Right. So mother, brother, whoever is remaining is not going to get saddled with that.
Right.
All right. Mara, last question for the day. Is someone wants to know about a repeat filing here or a different form. They say they want to know, can they file a Chapter 13 bankruptcy now or wait until the time period expires when they had previously filed a Chapter 7? Said that their bankrupt or their wages are currently being garnished and they're trying to find a way that they can have the garnishment stopped and go into a payment arrangement. Mm-hmm. The background is that he filed a Chapter 7, which was discharged in 2011.
They can contact a creditor and see if they can work out their own payment arrangement. It's very difficult to do because once a creditor has a garnishment going on, they really have no incentive to rely on someone's good faith to pay them voluntarily. So if that doesn't work, they could file Chapter 13, a Chapter 7, they couldn't file for 8 years, which would be 2019. A 13 would be now more than 4 years after their Chapter 7. So that allows them, if their circumstances are correct, meaning based on their budget and based on the results of the median income test, they may be able to pay the creditor a good deal less than 100 cents on the dollar. So a Chapter 13 can stop the garnishment, allow the debt to be repaid based upon the what the law allows from the results of the test and their budget. And in most situations, they're going to be paying a lot less under the 13 than the what they get taken from their check from the garnishment. And the employer will be quite happy not to have to deal with the paperwork.
Very, very, very true. Players would probably rather not. So, again, all sorts of different options there. And, again, these things don't always appear on the face of what logic might tell you. And there's a lot of details there, but especially between the Chapter 7 and the Chapter 13 bankruptcies. So, at any rate, I wanted to remind and thank all of our listeners. And thank you, Joe, for your time this morning. I want to thank and remind everyone to share these broadcast links and social networks when they see them. Many people find our shows and their friends' Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn pages, and we thank you all for support in sharing this programming because people don't always tell you that they are having financial difficulties. It's a competitive world out there, And some people might just be baking the bare minimum payments on all the nice things that they have. And we assume that they're rolling in the dough, but you never know who is, you know, has a health condition or a temporary emergency, or, you know, your kid falls and, you know, breaks a leg and, you know, there's an insurance lapse. So many different things can happen to good people that put them at a financial bind. So, again, while we don't always know who's experiencing those problems, that's why it's so important to share these programs when we see them so other people can find the information they need. So, again, Joe, I want to thank you for your time, and we'll be back next month.
Nick, I thank you again for hosting, as always.
All right. Everyone, have a great week. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.